It's important to note that depending upon how long our session goes, that the education community will not have to give out pink slips.
The Senate hopes to remove the issue of school funding from the contentious debate over the state budget. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, April 5th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, Alyeska Pipeline has drawn a lot of scrutiny for switching the tugboats and crews used to prevent oil spills in Prince William Sound.
It's an improvement. We're roundly convinced that it's an improvement.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by
Wells Fargo, with over 13,000 ATMs and more than 6,000 branches coast to coast. For a branch location near you, visit wellsfargo.com.
And by
Raven Alaska. Raven serves Alaskans in over 115 communities across the state. Seasonal spring routes now available to Kotzebue, Anchorage, Dillingham, and more. Information can be found at flyraven.com.
It's likely Alaska Permanent Fund dividends will be roughly $1,600 this year. That's because the Senate Finance Committee's draft version of the state budget includes the same amount as the House. The Senate committee budget would cut $98 million to fund the operations of state government from the House version of the budget. Most of those cuts would be to Medicaid. The Senate would provide funding for public schools in a separate bill by drawing $1.8 billion from permanent fund earnings. Bethel Senator Lyman Hoffman says that bill should provide reassurance to schools.
It's important to note that with the adoption of this, depending upon how long our session goes, that the education community will not have to give out pink slips.
In addition to the public schools funding, another $2.7 billion would be drawn from permanent fund earnings to help pay for the budget and for permanent fund dividends. The Senate draft budget would include another $135 million for oil and gas tax credits. Eagle River Republican Senator Anna McKinnon described the committee's goals during a press conference.
As you all know, Alaska's faced huge deficits. We've drawn down our savings account, and we are looking for ways to stabilize both Alaska's economy and to provide opportunities and optimism for Alaskans.
The draft budget relies on a $700 million draw from the Constitutional Budget Reserve, the piggy bank the state has used to cover spending gaps in previous years. The education funding bill could also provide early funding for education for the year after next, but it would only do that if the House and Senate reach agreement on a long-term plan to draw money from permanent fund earnings to pay for state government. The Senate Finance Committee will hear public testimony on the budget and school funding bills tomorrow morning, beginning at 9 a.m. New tugboats, barges, and crews have been arriving in Port Valdez over the past few weeks. The fleet is the most visible sign of a huge transition taking place in Prince William Sound. Alyeska Pipeline Service Company is bringing on a new contractor responsible for preventing another oil spill like the Exxon Valdez. The switch has drawn a lot of scrutiny and criticism, so Alyeska is trying hard to reassure Alaskans the Sound will be safer from oil spills than ever before. Elizabeth Harbaugh from Alaska's Energy Desk has the story.
It's a picture-perfect day for a media tour in Port Valdez, and the captain of the tugboat I'm on welcomes a small band of reporters and camera crews.
You guys ready to go for a boat ride?
This is the Commander, built by the Louisiana-based company Edison Schuest. This summer, Edison Schuest is taking over a crucial task, preventing and responding to oil spills in Prince William Sound. This tug will help guide oil tankers. But for now, we're just going for a spin.
Commander, service base.
Yeah, be advised we're about to depart service dock. Go observe the terminal.
In all, Edison Schuest is bringing in 9 brand new tugs and 4 new response barges. Barges specifically designed and outfitted to respond to an oil spill. On board one of the barges, Alyeska's Mike Day guides reporters to the oil spill cleanup equipment.
So we'll start at the stern and make our way forward.
Pointing at the underside of the skimmers, a line of fuzzy white discs designed to collect oil, Day explains how they're a big improvement from the old skimmers.
The existing skimmers pick up about 22% oil and about 78% water. These skimmers are roughly twice that efficient.
That theme continued throughout the tour. We were told about upgrade after upgrade, from the tugboat's more powerful engines to the toilets in the living quarters. When it comes to the transition to Edison Chouest, this is the message Alyeska wants to hit home.
It's an improvement. We're roundly convinced that it's an improvement.
There's a reason Alyeska is working so hard to make that case. The contractor that Edison Chouest is replacing, Crowley Marine Services, has had a long, successful history in Prince William Sound. When Alyeska said it was ending its contract with Crowley, it drew a lot of skepticism. Day says that's understandable.
As Alyeska, we knew that this would receive a lot of scrutiny, and we welcome that. So, no, there was no illusion that this was going to be a matter of swapping out some tugboats and some people and continuing business.
Some of the loudest criticism has come from the unions. Crowley's workers are union members. Edison Chouest are not. Don Marcus is president of the International Organization of Masters, Mates, and Pilots.
It's quite frankly a disgrace, so that's how we feel about it.
Marcus brands Edison Chouest as, quote, exceedingly anti-union. It's not clear if the company will hire Crowley workers. Marcus argues that by bringing in crews new to Alaska waters, Edison Chouest is putting Prince William Sound at risk. Alyeska disagrees. It says Edison Chouest captains have decades of experience and that they're undergoing extensive training to prepare for the Sound's conditions. But training is also an issue for another group, the Prince William Sound Regional Citizens Advisory Council. Amanda Bauer is president of the council's board, and for over a decade, she's also captained a tour boat in Valdez.
Working on the water and working in the Sound like I do, I don't see a whole lot of the winter weather, but I see enough in the fall to know what it can do and how different it can be and how even, you know, the smallest conditions, even just 6 to 9 foot seas, can sometimes be the worst.
In January, the council asked Alyeska to require Edison Chouest crews to train in all the weather conditions they're expected to operate in. Alyeska flatly rejected this request. It says training in rough weather would put crews in danger unnecessarily. Bauer says this is a big reason why she still has reservations.
There's ways to get rid of the skepticism, but until they do that, and until something is done in some heavy seas, I'm always going to be skeptical of it.
Still, Bauer says she's cautiously optimistic about Edison Chouest's arrival. She says new tugs and barges are a huge investment for Alyeska, and from her perspective, that shows commitment.
So these are our two boats that we operate today. And we go primarily out of Valdez, but we go to Whittier across the Sound a few times a week as well.
In a harbor near where Edison Chouest's new tug is docked, Bauer is getting her boats ready for the season, catamarans that seat about 150 tourists. Standing by the captain's seat, Bauer says the visitors come to see glaciers and whales, but also...
Every year I think this is the year I'm not going to talk about the Exxon Valdez anymore. It's been 29 years, but it's always the first question that somebody asks when they get on the boat. Where was the Exxon Valdez? What happened? And so we still talk about it. We still, you know, narrate the whole thing. And I don't know if that's ever going to change. I don't know when we'll get away from that.
The lasting memory of the Exxon Valdez disaster is why Alyeska is required to put so much into preventing an oil spill. It's why there are two tugboats guiding every oil tanker. And it's why barges with boom and skimmers are always standing by. And it's why Alaskans like Bauer will be watching very closely when Edison Chouest officially takes over the job on July 1st. For Alaska's Energy Desk in Valdez, I'm Elizabeth Harpal.
Pebble Limited Partnership owner Northern Dynasty Metals and potential partner First Quantum Minerals have a few more weeks to finalize their option agreement. In December, the parties announced that First Quantum had agreed to buy into Pebble at $150 million over 4 years. At the end of those 4 years, First Quantum would have the option to become a 50% owner of PLP. The original framework agreement gave the companies until April 6th to finalize the agreement. After the December announcement, Pebble Limited Partnership CEO Tom Collier said the initial $150 million would help fund the permitting phase of the proposed gold, copper, and molybdenum mine in Bristol Bay. Northern Dynasty announced in a press release today that the deadline has been extended to April 30th. A Northern Dynasty spokesperson said negotiations are requiring more time than the initial April 6th deadline, but did not provide further details. First Quantum Minerals did not immediately respond to a request for comment. Northern Dynasty Minerals is the sole owner of the Pebble Limited Partnership. Northern Dynasty used to be partnered with Anglo American on the project, but Anglo American backed out of the partnership in 2013. The body of a man missing on a weekend boating trip out of Whittier has been recovered. Anchorage television station KTVA reports volunteer searchers found the body of 53-year-old Carl Stoltz on Tuesday afternoon. Stoltz, at about 8 a.m. Saturday, left the Whittier Boat Harbor in a 16-foot skiff to check crab pots north of Whittier. When he did not return, the Coast Guard and volunteers searched a 10-square mile area in Passage Canal and Whittier Harbor. Whittier Harbormaster Kyle Sinclair says searchers on Tuesday spotted a buoy and found Stoltz's body tangled in crab pot lines. Stoltz is the brother of former State Senator Bill Stoltz of Chugiak. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, hundreds gather in Anchorage to celebrate Alaska's Olympians, including gold medalist Keegan Randall.
This may be the first in women's cross country, but it's not going to be the last. They're just going to come flooding in now.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Each semester, undergraduate students at UAA are learning through hands-on research experiences that take them outside the classroom. Working alongside faculty and professionals in the field, students have used their research to begin exciting careers, to secure patents for their inventions, and to earn national academic accolades. Amazing stories are being written every day at UAA. More at uaa.alaska.edu/admissions. This message sponsored by UAA.
The Matanuska Susitna Borough is considering a change to how it funds education. A proposed ordinance before the Matsu Assembly would direct the borough to calculate funding of schools as a percentage of the property taxes it takes in each year, and it would set the rate for 5 years. The borough says it would do away with complicated annual calculations it uses now and provide a predictable amount for schools. The school district still gets the majority of its funding from the state, but that has lagged in recent years, putting more financial pressure on the borough. In spite of a growing student population, last year funding for the school district stayed flat. The proposal was up for public comment at this week's borough assembly meeting, and there appeared to be an even mix of supporters and opponents speaking out. Parent and business owner Dan Vinoy says he supports the proposal because it could make it possible to hire more teachers, shrink class sizes, and provide more opportunities for students.
That's going to be our future workforce, future leaders, future teachers, and everything else that these kids have the opportunity to become. I definitely think that it's something to see the value in being able to fill these teaching positions and actually have smaller classrooms, give them the opportunity to do these additional activities so that we can have a well-rounded person that comes out every single time.
Under current property value totals, the borough estimates school funding at the proposed rate of 6.25 mils would be nearly $58 million next year, an increase of a little less than 4% from the current fiscal year. The Matsu Borough School District has proposed bumping that figure up slightly more to a mill rate of 6.5. The ordinance would not add any new taxes, and the Matsu Borough manager has proposed leaving the overall area mill rate unchanged. But some testifying before the assembly on Tuesday night said the school district should not get more money regardless. That includes Lauren Means.
We just need to do a better job with what we've got. If we could just figure a way to take some of the top end expenses out and leave it down at the bottom where the rubber meets the road with students, there's not an overpaid teacher anywhere in our school district. I do believe we've got overpaid administrators and too many of them.
Public comment on the school funding ordinance is set to continue at the Assembly's next meeting on April 17th. Senator Dan Sullivan's former campaign manager Ben Sparks may be facing arrest following a bizarre report of domestic violence in Las Vegas. The political advisor's ex-partner told the Las Vegas Review-Journal that Sparks abused and assaulted her, culminating in an altercation at her house late last month. She showed the paper a contract she and Sparks signed, committing her to being his, quote, slave in training, end quote. She said his behavior escalated and became abusive in recent weeks. The Review-Journal does not name the woman. The article cites a police report that says Sparks called 911 but fled before police arrived and that officers found probable cause to arrest him for domestic battery. Sparks has worked for Republican political campaigns around the country. He had been working for a congressional campaign in Las Vegas, but the Review-Journal reports he was fired after the March 29th incident. Sullivan's Senate office, in a written statement, called the allegations against Sparks shocking and extremely disturbing and said Sparks' employment ended at the conclusion of the 2014 campaign. Sparks also worked in Alaska in 2016 on a campaign called Alaska's Future. It aimed to convince Alaska lawmakers to tap the permanent fund to help close the fiscal gap. The Sitka Sack Roe herring fishery has shut down early this year, falling 8,330 tons short of the high guideline harvest level. This is the fourth time in 6 years the herring fishery has shut down before meeting the quota. KCAW's Emily Kwong reports.
The Alaska Department of Fish and Game made the closure announcement over VHF radio at 11 a.m. Tuesday morning after aerial surveys failed to spot herring schools of marketable size. Area management biologist Eric Kunrat said the decision was made in consultation with processors who found the fish too small for market standards. Processors buy herring from the fleet and harvest roe for sale to Japan. Here's Kunrat.
Some attrition of the fleet that's in town. We've had some attrition of processors that are in town, and so it just seemed like the writing was kind of on the wall.
The fleet has been on standby since March 20th. At the start, the six processors involved, including the local Silver Bay Seafoods and Sitka Sound Seafoods, wanted herring that weighed an average of 125 to 130 grams. ADF&G forecasted the average weight for the biomass would be 106 grams, so already below market standard. Kunrat said there was one chance to catch herring of that size on March 25th, the first opening of the fishery, and the fleet missed the opportunity.
They stayed deep until they spawned, and that we had one shot at the larger fish, and then gave a second opportunity the next day, and then our, you know, the fish gradually got smaller as the opening went on, and so we closed the fishery, and then we were just weren't able to find any marketable fish after that point.
A week and many aerial surveys later, most of the fleet has left town. The Sitka Sack Roe herring fishery has come under intense scrutiny by local subsistence harvesters in the past 5 years. Sitka Tribe of Alaska sought conservation measures at this year's Board of Fish, but no changes were made to the formula for determining the quota. KCAW asked Kunrat what he thought about this year's management model. Do you have concerns about the management model ADF&G is using in light of this fishery falling 8,000 tons short?
No. It's bound to happen in some years. We've got time, and we've got area working against us. You know, it's a short time frame that we're trying to harvest these fish, and some years we're bound to not catch it all, especially when market standards are a pretty high bar to achieve. So, I mean, we could have easily harvested, the quota, but it would have required market standards to be much lower.
Meaning younger fish of a lower weight. Now that management of the fishery has come to a close, the Alaska Department of Fish and Game will continue aerial surveys to gauge just how many fish returned to Sitka this spring. So far, they've measured 13.3 nautical miles of herring spawn. Last year saw 62.3 nautical miles. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Emily Kwong.
Due to record low Chinook forecasts and state restrictions, Wrangell has canceled its annual King Salmon Derby for the first time. Wrangell has held the longest King Derby in Southeast Alaska, lasting a whole month. The local Chamber of Commerce will hold a Silver Salmon Derby instead. KSTK's June Leffler has more.
Other towns had limited or canceled their derbies in the past, but this year marks the first change for Wrangell since the event's beginning 65 years ago. The cancellation is due to the Alaska Department of Fish and Game's area closures. The agency announced in January that District 8 at the mouth of the Stikine River would be closed for sport retention from April to mid-July. The local chamber had anticipated further closures and got the official notice last week. Districts 6 and 7 are closed until mid-June. They encompass waters surrounding the entirety of Wrangell Island west to Kaufman Cove. Cindy Crary is the executive director of the Wrangell Chamber of Commerce.
It's really unfortunate that our King Salmon Derby is being canceled, but there's nothing we can do about it considering the closures. And so we feel like this is, you know, an excellent opportunity to bring back the Coho Salmon Derby.
Wrangell's Derby for Silver or Coho Salmon is a throwback for the town. It was last held in the late 1970s. This marks the first time it will be held not in conjunction with a King Derby.
And so this time, you know, people aren't going to be able to fish for quite a while and retain the fish. So this is like, it'll get people really excited to get out on the water and compete.
The Silver Derby is meant to supplement the excitement and the economic boost usually seen with the King Derby. Folks from out of town come to Wrangell to fish the Derby, and local retailers could always count on getting a boost from the event.
Just from everything that people get when they go out fishing. You know, mm-hmm. From their fishing licenses to their beer to their bait.
The Silver Salmon Derby will last from August 11th through September 3rd, but only on the weekends. This year's derby tickets will be reduced from $35 to $20. The chamber will award weekly $250 cash prizes, with a $500 prize for Labor Day weekend. The top awards will be based on a cumulative 3-fish catch. Those prizes are $2,000 for first place, $1,500 for second, and $1,000 for third. In Wrangell, I'm June Leffler.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips, investing and exploring on the North Slope and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, unlocking Alaska's energy resources. And by Alaska Heart and Vascular Institute, committing to improving the lives of Alaskans. Using a team approach, Alaska Heart and Vascular Institute offers a range of cardiovascular diagnoses and care. Learn more at alaskaheart.com. If you love a good mystery, Thursday nights on Alaska Public Media TV is the place for you. Join us every week as we search for clues, put the pieces together, and figure out who done it. Mystery Thursdays only on Alaska Public Media TV.
Members of the Alaska Alcohol Beverage Control Board have been told that their January vote forbidding distilleries from serving alcoholic mixed drinks is invalid. The Juneau Empire reported on Tuesday that the vote has been deemed invalid due to a mistake made by a board member. That means the state's distilleries can continue serving cocktails through at least the first half of this summer. The Alaska Department of Law said public notice of the vote was improperly posted beforehand. Assistant Attorney General Harriet Milk said notice was given in the Anchorage Press, which doesn't qualify under the Administrative Procedures Act. The board will not be able to re-vote until June at the earliest, and any decision barring mixed drinks may not be enforced until July or later. Families, friends, and even some former Olympians gathered in downtown Anchorage yesterday to celebrate the return of gold medalist Keegan Randall and the rest of the Alaskan Olympic contingent. Alaska Public Media's Emily Russell was at the celebration and has the story.
Under a red tent, Alaskan Olympians signed posters, hugged friends, and met fans of all ages.
I keep meeting all the grandmas. Like, most time you meet, like, the kids.
That's two-time Olympic cross-country skier Sadie Bjornsson.
I got, like, an email from this grandma the other day. It was like, you know, I think you need to step it up and stop being so humble and find your true how good you are. It was like, spoken like a true grandma. Thank you very much.
Bjornsson was one of 10 cross-country skiers from Alaska at the 2018 Winter Games. Many of the Alaskans were at Wednesday's celebration, greeting those grandmas, hugging their friends, and posing for pictures with fans. One of the Alaskan fan favorites from the 2018 Olympics was figure skater Keegan Messing.
It was so cool to have the support of Alaska behind me going into the Olympics. It was unbelievable.
Messing is from Girdwood, but represented his mother's home country of Canada at his first Winter Games. Sporting a red flannel hat with the Canadian maple leaf, Messing grinned as he talked about competing in South Korea.
I almost broke into tears like 30 seconds before I was getting on the ice, just because my eyes wandered up, I saw the rings, and I was like, I'm about to skate at the Olympics.
Hundreds of people in the crowd cheered as their hometown Olympians took the stage in person or on the big screen. Paralympic skier Andrew Kirka recorded this message for the crowd.
I wanted to say thank you for taking this moment to celebrate Alaska's victory as athletes, and I wish I was there with my gold and silver medals to share it with all of you. There's no place I would rather be. Thank you for showing your support to all of us, and love you.
It was an emotional evening, especially for the other Alaskan Olympic gold medalist, Keegan Randall. Randall's brother was in the crowd dressed as a lookalike. Her dad carried around a 2-foot-tall cardboard cutout of Keegan's face. And there was another superfan waiting to greet her, Senator Lisa Murkowski.
To have a gold medal come back by an Alaskan, a female, a mom who we have all been following for years and years is pretty cool.
Randall was competing in her 5th and final Olympics. In her last race, Randall and Jesse Diggins teamed up for the skate sprint. It was down to the final stretch that Diggins pulled ahead of the Swedish skier.
The moment that will be etched in U.S. Olympic history, the first ever cross-country gold medal for the U.S.
Keegan Randall retires with a gold medal round her neck.
I think I played a little part in that, because as Jesse's coming down the finish, I'm standing next to the Swedish girl, and we're both yelling as loud as we can at our teammates as if we can will them to the finish faster.
With a fresh strip of pink in her hair and her gold medal around her neck, Randall also talked about the disappointment of not medaling in 2014 and how, with the help of her teammates and support from Alaska, she came back this year and made history, winning the first medal ever for the American women's cross-country ski team.
This may be the first in women's cross-country, but it's not going to be the last. They're just going to come flooding in now. So thank you so much.
Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Emily Russell.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. We had reports tonight from Andrew Kitchenman in Juneau, Elizabeth Harbaugh in Valdez, Casey Grove and Emily Russell in Anchorage, Avery Lill in Dillingham, Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Emily Kwong in Sitka, and June Leffler in Wrangell. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Wesley Early is our web editor. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Raven Alaska. Raven now provides Alaskans with the day over, a 24-hour stop in any major hub along the way to a destination, including Anchorage, Kotzebue, and Bethel. More information at ravendayover.com.
UA is working to build Alaska's future workforce with investment in UA-educated teachers. Individuals interested in a future in teaching can apply for the President's Teach for Alaska Scholarship for degree studies at any of the UA campuses. An education from the University of Alaska is an investment in the future. Application period closes May 1st. More at alaska.edu/learn-to-teach. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska. Did you know while exposed to secondhand smoke, every breath you take can damage your heart? Cells lining blood vessels become swollen and inflamed. Plaque builds, narrowing blood vessels, and clots can form, robbing the heart of oxygen. Exposure to secondhand smoke increases your heart disease risk by up to 30%. It's your heart. Protect it. This message sponsored by Alaska Tobacco Quitline, 1-800-QUIT-NOW. Would you like to play a part in the public media you enjoy? Consider becoming a member or corporate sponsor. Contact your public radio station to learn how. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.